You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. Today's show will be with Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks. Brad's popping on to talk about Tuesday night's matchup between the Heat and Hawks, the loss of Trae Young, who the better player is, either John Collins or Bam Adebayo, what we might expect from the rookies this season, both in Atlanta and Miami, as well as the matchup on Thursday night when both teams face each other again, this time in Atlanta. I'm joined now by Brad Rowland, host of Locked On Hawks, to talk about Tuesday's game between Atlanta and Miami and to preview their upcoming matchup on Thursday night. How you doing, Brad, first of all?
I'm all right. You know, it's basketball season. We're getting into the swing of things here. I feel like we've already been in the season for weeks, and it hasn't been that long, but we're ready to go.
It's been a week, actually, hasn't it? I mean, I think Wednesday was Miami's first game. They've played four games since then, but it's just there's so much going on almost every night. It's a lot of fun, but it's also a little hectic sometimes keeping up with everything.
That is certainly true. And the Hawks didn't even open until Thursday, so it's actually been less than a week for me, which is kind of crazy. But
wow,
yeah, jam packed.
Yeah, so let's get right into it. Obviously, the big news that Trae Young's injury not as bad as originally thought. I guess the MRI revealed that it was a mild sprain and that he'd be out for about a week or so. I know he'll be out for Thursday's matchup against Miami, but what's the prognosis on that, if you can offer any other details?
Yeah, he actually avoided an MRI, which was a surprise in the reporting and what the Hawks eventually announced. No MRI actually was even taken. I guess this morning went down so much this morning that they are, not official listing of his day to day, but they're saying he's out for Thursday and will not be reevaluated until Monday. But looks like it's going to be fairly short term based on all the reporting and the official word. So, yeah, one game missed, which is the one we're going to talk about sometimes here. But not too bad for the Hawks. Pretty positive.
Yeah. What did you think of the injury? I mean, I know it was a fluke occurrence. It wasn't, you didn't see anything flavor. I know fans can be a little irrational sometimes, but did you see anything from Justice where maybe Hawks fans might be a little upset? Is he going to get booed in Atlanta, do you think, for causing an injury to Trae Young?
I'd be surprised. I mean, I couldn't imagine, honestly, until you said that, I couldn't imagine anybody thinking that. Maybe somebody will, just because that's the nature of the beast, but I didn't see much of anything like that. I think it was just more of that freak incident that happens sometimes. And I think it would have been worse, but now that it's generally seemed to be okay, the venom, if there was any, should die down. So, but yeah, I didn't really see anything weird there, just a kind of typical ankle thing. And by the way, it was kind of Trae Young's first injury ever, from what he was saying. Right. Like, so that's kind of interesting too, but a run-of-the-mill sprained ankle, if it had been worse than that, maybe something else. But for me, didn't see much to get upset about.
So what was your take on Atlanta's performance following the Young injury? Because obviously you guys were both teams were neck and neck until the injury, and then things kind of fell apart, I think, for Atlanta from that point forward. Did you expect that to be the case, or did you think maybe the Hawks would be able to put up a little bit more of a fight even without Young there?
It was honestly pretty on brand for what I imagine would happen if they did not have Trae Young. That's kind of the top line thought that I would have. All offseason we talked about what would happen if Trae rolled an ankle, or if Trae, had a wrist injury or something like that and missed a week. And the general consensus was that the Hawks would be in some trouble on offense. They just don't really have much firepower. They have some guys who are skilled, but they don't really have a primary ball handler aside from him. So the fact that they just kind of couldn't score after Young left the game was not a huge surprise. They played decent defense at times, but they went like 5.5 minutes without a single point in the second quarter. It may not be that bad all the time. There's probably some shock about Young not being there. But still, I think for the most part, the offensive struggles were pretty indicative of kind of what I'm expecting. Honestly, as long as Trae's off the court. And defensively, they could actually probably be a little bit better without him, because they could play bigger and switch and stuff like that. But the offense is just going to be kind of rough.
So who starts in his place on Thursday night?
It's honestly a great question. The big thing right now that national people are starting to realize that we've been talking about for a while is that the Hawks don't really have a backup point guard. They don't really have that guy. I mean, they have a two-way guy in Brandon Goodwin, who was already sent to the G League and might be back by the time the game starts on Thursday. But I think it's going to be, DeAndre Bembry, he's the guy who started the second half on on Tuesday. But honestly, it's going to be a rotating door of characters. It's kind of a bad answer that you're asking me that, but I really don't know. I mean, we're all kind of guessing. It could be Bembry. It could be Kevin Herter, who's been on a minutes restriction, who's really is normally the starting shooting guard. He could start at point guard, I guess, nominally. But yeah, no real clear answer. And for the most part, it's going to be a lot of different guys doing a lot of different things.
Is that by design? I mean, what was Lloyd Pierce thinking arranging this team? I mean, obviously, it's not just up to him. But I mean, what's the rationale behind having a team without any true backup there? I mean, I know most teams carry at least one player who can be, a seminal backup there. I don't understand the thinking there.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on this one.
Okay.
I referenced this quite a bit. I had some people all around the league that didn't understand that before the season started too. It's pretty curious. I think the thinking, to be generous to Travis Schlenk, who built this roster, is that when you have Trae Young and he's your offensive engine, and you know, ideally you would want someone to maybe play alongside him as a backup point guard. And I guess the backup point guard need is a little bit smaller when your point guard is your best player and is going to play, you know, high 30s in minutes. That's the generous interpretation. I do think that it would have been nice to have an option, even if that guy didn't play all the time. Right. If they wanted to go big at times when Trae left the court, I would have understood that. But maybe signing someone as a stopgap in this exact case, I know Trae is very durable, which is something to their credit, I suppose, that they would have seen that coming. But, you know, freak injuries happen. And I am kind of with you on this one. It didn't really make a ton of sense to me. I think they just wanted to build a sort of switchable, big, versatile unit with a lot of different options. And they do have a bunch of secondary ball handlers. So if you want to be generous, you could say that, look, they have like five or six guys who can kind of fill that role in certain degrees. You know, when they acquired Evan Turner in the trade from Kent Bazemore, that day they were already leaking out information saying that he was going to be the backup point guard. So that was the plan all along. I'm not sure it was a good plan, but it was the plan.
Yeah, maybe it's just my perspective from covering Miami for so long that where they've had like multiple players at each position with this kind of depth, not having any kind of clear superstar, but having this glut almost at every position with nobody really emerging and this kind of, this variance as far as like skill sets and a lot of versatility. But again, no real clear-cut star, at least until, you know, Jimmy Butler's addition this summer. So my thinking is that, well, you always have somebody who can at least handle that position. But, I mean, it's just interesting that it's played out this way. I would never have thought of Evan Turner as the backup point guard, but I guess that's something that he could potentially play. But let's kind of get into Tuesday's game a little bit, because I'm curious what you thought about Miami. Is this your first chance actually seeing Miami? Well, I think it's a lot now that I think about it. With Jimmy Butler there, clearly it's the first time anybody's seen this real rotation from Eric Spoelstra. So what were your original thoughts on this Miami Heat team?
Yeah, I had seen bits and pieces of Miami, but certainly the first full game that I watched, and of course the first game with Butler that anybody had seen on a grand scale, you know, I thought they were pretty solid. I mean, that was took advantage of the offense that the Hawks were not able to put on the court after Young left the game. Yeah. But, you know, Jimmy had a nice strong start. I think he had 12 points in the first like 7-8 minutes, something like that. He played very well early on. I didn't think he was like spectacular by any means. Maybe you did. I thought he was okay. He just kind of looked like Jimmy Butler to me. And Tyler Hero, for whatever reason, just kind of owns the Hawks. He had the huge game in the preseason as well, where he absolutely exploded and went crazy, mostly against Trae Young in the first quarter. This time around, it was the second quarter. But, yeah, I mean, that was kind of the two things that really ended up dooming the Hawks defensively in this game. And I thought Goran Dragic played well. Dragic has been a guy I think people have just kind of forgotten nationally, if I can speak to that. I think Dragic is kind of just a guy who used to be good in a lot of people's minds, but he can still play. And I think that's pretty clear, but because he's not starting and all that stuff, he's just kind of anonymous, but he played well. I thought that Miami wasn't spectacular, but they absolutely didn't need to be. They kind of just held serve and got through it in a game where their starters just kind of dominated.
Yeah. I mean, the Dragic thing is pretty interesting, because I was talking to Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors, and he was telling me how Raptors fans hate Goran Dragic for some reason. So I think there's this there's this kind of weird national perception about Goran, the player that he is. I know he's a little physical as a point guard, and maybe that's part of the reason why there's some vitriol headed his way. But as far as his level of play, last year was a kind of an aberration in that he was injured and obviously not much of a contributor. And he's clearly in decline. Last night's game, being somewhat atypical, I don't think we're going to be able to see that kind of production regularly from him. I mean, probably close to it, but not exactly at that point. He was just, I mean, his shooting was phenomenal. 7 of 12 overall and 5 of 9 from three-point range. I'm not sure that we're going to get that kind of explosive scoring from him, but I think the six-man rule – role for him is one that he's really well suited for, and he's willing to make the change. That was a surprising thing about a guy like him who was an all-NBA selection, an all-star, and that he's just very comfortable coming off the bench, but I think he can absolutely be a productive player.
Yeah, I think that's a good description. I think, you know, a lot of teams would like to have Goran Dragic on their teams.
Not Dallas, supposedly.
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, that whole negotiation was strange, and I'm sure you talked about it at length. But yeah, just kind of odd in some ways to have him in that role, but also a nice luxury for the Heat, who were obviously pretty loaded in some respects. I was interested to see the matchup between Bam Adebayo and John Collins. They were famously in the same draft class and compared to each other quite often. Both guys played well. I thought Collins was kind of the only guy who played well offensively for the Hawks in this game. And then Bam is Bam. Bam's very good. I know you know that, but I'm just going to say it out loud.
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit more in the next segment. Coming up next, the matchup to watch on Thursday night. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Locked On at checkout. Let's get into it a little bit. We'll debate the Bam Adebayo versus John Collins matchup. What's your take of that? Because I think obviously both, as you hinted at before, both from the same draft class, Adebayo completely different. Collins seems to shoot particularly well against Miami. And I kind of tend to think, you know, that he's still a little annoyed at the fact that the hometown team didn't select him in the draft and passed him up in order to select Adebayo. Collins fell. What was his draft position? He was what, 16th or something like that?
He went all the way to 19, which was actually a pretty big surprise at the time, but the Hawks were happy about it.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt it. I mean, I thought he was a good fit in Miami, and obviously he was a name that was attached to the Heat for a long time. They brought him in for workouts. He spoke glowingly about the franchise, and I mean, a lot of that is just pre-draft stuff, but he did talk about the opportunity to play for his hometown team, the team that he rooted for when he was growing up and things of that sort. So I was a little surprised. Adebayo wasn't on, I think, anybody's radar as far as the 13th selection for Miami. And so that was a huge shock. And, you know, I remember the night of the draft thinking, you know, who is this Bam Adebayo? And then seeing some of his workouts and what he could do at Kentucky. And obviously at Kentucky, you don't see the full picture of what a player could bring to the table. But since then, I think a lot of Heat fans are very surprised. And Adebayo, as you mentioned before, very, very good. A strong defensive presence, a guy who can bring the ball up, and a very, very strong initiator on offense as well. So how would you compare the two players? And you know, which one of them would you prefer having on your roster? I know you kind of seen John Collins a lot more closely than I have. So what is it about Collins that makes him stand out as a player?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. They're basically the same age as well and very similar size. I think Bam is more of a center than John Collins. You know, coming into the league, I personally thought that Collins was going to end up being maybe not a full-time center, but more of a primary center. Yeah. To this point in time, he's pretty much played the four. I mean, there are times when the Hawks play him at the five, but for the most part, he's playing three quarters of his minutes or maybe even more than that at the four. So slightly different roles there. Collins is more, you know, established as an offensive entity. You know, last year he averaged, I think, you know, almost 20 points a game, 19 and a half points a game for a full season, whereas Bam was just in a smaller role and wasn't able to post that kind of production. I think Bam's the better defensive player right now, pretty comfortably, although Collins is showing some good signs this season that are very, very encouraging to me because I've been worried about Collins' defense for quite some time, but he's showing good signs in my opinion. Whereas I think I certainly prefer John offensively from a safety perspective. He's just kind of done it. I do think Bam is very skilled, and like you said, initiates pretty well in an underrated way. So I think they're, I don't know, similar is the wrong word, but they're kind of comparable in a lot of ways. They're, you know, yeah. The fact that they're the same size really turns that in, and of course the same draft class. So I think if anything, you'll get more comparisons instead of less. Maybe you've heard it more there than I have here, but I think in Atlanta, there hasn't been a huge comparison between the two. I think because Miami passed on Collins because he is from there, you've probably even heard it more than I have, but it does make some sense.
Yeah, I mean, his shooting is certainly a lot stronger than Bam's. Is that, I know he wasn't very productive this season to this point, but did you expect him to be able to put up the kind of hot shooting he did, 5 of 8 from 3-point range? I know a lot of that had to do with the fact that Trey was out and he kind of had to take up the bulk of the offense. But even before Young's injury, I feel like he knocked down a number of those shots in that first quarter. And I don't think anybody really expected him to be such a hot shooter from the perimeter.
Yeah, that was definitely an outlier. I think it was actually his career high with 5 makes, and he made four in the first quarter, which is certainly a career high for any quarter that he's had so far in his career. So certainly an outlier, but you know, he didn't make 35% from 3 last year on some decent volume, so it wasn't coming out of nowhere. There was certainly some question marks, at least for me, before last season. But by the time he was sort of seeing a full season of sample of him shooting, you know, effectively and with confidence, I now believe it. You know, last night was certainly on the very, very high end for what he can do as a shooter. But I think it's definitely a weapon for him. And the fact that he's been able to add that and some creation on the perimeter, he's pretty tough to guard now. Defensively, there are questions. And I'm not saying he's going to be a superstar offensively, but the fact that he basically had a full season already where he averaged nearly 20 and 10 at 21 years old. Like, there's just a lot of production there, and doing it efficiently is also pretty impressive. So, you know, the shooting isn't quite what you saw last night, to be sure, right. But it's definitely a weapon for him.
4 assists too. Is he a strong playmaker? I don't know if I would categorize him at the same level as Bam Adebayo, but is that a strong suit of his?
I think Bam's a better playmaker right now. Collins has come on with that. They want him to have the ball in his hands more. He definitely wants to do that and sees himself as someone who can kind of be an all-court kind of player. He's flashed it, to be sure, in the short roll situations. Like, he could certainly have the ball in his hands more often than I ever thought he was going to coming into the NBA. I still think Bam's a little bit further ahead of him because he's just more comfortable in my mind. But Collins has been able to do that, and the passing, particularly now if Trey misses a game or two, we'll see the ball in his hands even more. And I said this on my podcast last night. I think the Hawks should have played through him even more than they did against Miami on Tuesday. I know he had 30 points, but he probably should have the ball as a primary even more than he did. So using him in that role is their best bet right now, and I think he could handle more usage.
Do you expect Kevin Huerter to I know he's on a minutes restriction, but how do you see his role evolving this year? Because I think he's a guy that is probably flying under a lot of radars right now. I had a chance to talk to him in Orlando last year, and it seemed like he was really up on the up and up at that point, and then he was injured, and now obviously he's still missing time there. But I like his game. I think a lot of people still see him as a shooter, but he has a lot of versatility offensively. What do you see his role being for Atlanta this year?
Yeah, I think once he is back to full go, not on a restriction minutes wise, he'll be the starting shooting guard. I mean, there's kind of a local push because Cam Reddish is a very, very popular player. He's been starting nominally at the 2 because they don't really have another option there. But for me, Kevin Huerter is the best shooting guard on the roster, pretty clearly. I was saying before the season started, he was the 3rd best player on the team. I still believe that at this point in time. You know, Hunter's been very good as a rookie, but Huerter is someone who can create offense in an underrated way. Like you said, you know, his shooting is his number one asset still by a pretty significant margin, but he's a legit 6'7". He can handle the ball. He's a semi-decent defender who can have some growth in that area as well. If he gets stronger, that's the big thing for him, but he's already put on a little bit of weight, get to the free throw line more and do a little bit more off the dribble than he was able to do last year. Sort of the sky's the limit. I think that not necessarily star upside, but certainly a guy who can go out and maybe average 18 a game for a full season, that kind of player in the future. This year, still a supporting piece to be sure, but you know, definitely a dynamic shooter. And the fact that he can kind of do more, I think, again, same thing as Collins, without Trae Young on the floor, he's going to have the ball in his hands. Even when Trae is playing, when Trae goes to the bench, you're going to want Kevin Huerter to have the ball in his hands because he's maybe the best playmaker that they have without Young, which is not necessarily his number one thing, but because he can do that, you want to give him an opportunity to grow, and that's something he can certainly do in the future.
I kind of want to take a step back a little bit now that I have you on the line here and just wonder about what's the plan for Atlanta, because I think a lot of people view this team, and obviously they're very young. They're not rebuilding anymore. They're still building towards something. But I think a lot of people have questions about what it is that they're building towards. Some people see them as a legitimate playoff team right now. I don't happen to be in that group, but I think obviously you have a much better perspective on where the team is coming from, where they'd like to accomplish this season, and what their end goals are and how soon they'd like to achieve them. Because I think that's, you know, obviously the playoffs would be a great achievement for them, but I don't know if it's realistic. Where do you stand on this?
Yeah, I think that it, you know, the playoffs should be a goal for this team this season, but one that I personally feel is not super likely. It is certainly possible, and we saw a little bit of that flash in their first 2 games when they went out and beat a couple of pretty solid teams in Detroit and Orlando. But I think this Hawks team is still a year away from that being like the absolute goal, like the expectation kind of thing. Whereas this year it's a high end goal and it's one that's attainable, but this is still a building season. In my opinion, you know, there is some upside with this team because of Trae Young, especially, and because of John Collins. In fact, they have some competent veterans, but for the most part, this is a very, very youthful basketball team. They have a lot of guys who are under 25 years old playing prominent roles. They have a bunch of first, second, and third year players playing a bunch. And the rookies right now, Cam Reddish, DeAndre Hunter, and Bruno Fainter are all playing real roles, and rookies are generally not great necessarily in the moment. You know, Hunter is more advanced than a typical rookie, but Reddish and Fernando, not as much. So, you know, for me, they're still a year away from being that kind of team, but playoffs is what they should be aiming for. I think it's a realistic goal for them, but not something that I'm going to actually predict to happen. It's more of the, for me, they're more like that number 10 kind of team in the Eastern Conference, maybe 10, 11 range, something like that, you know, low to mid 30s in the wins. And that's kind of where I've been. And nothing really changed in the first week of the season. I know maybe people got more excited in Atlanta, and with good reason, by the way, because Trae looks so good. But for me, I'm not changing much about what I think, and it's still a building season for me.
What is the vibe around Atlanta about the team? I mean, now that they have a clear superstar there in Trae and another complimentary player in John Collins, is there more excitement about the team that there has been in the past? I mean, I know a lot of it's been a little overstated about not being able to sell out the arena and things of this sort, but is there broad fan support for this kind of group?
Yeah, I think it's probably the most buzz they've had, honestly, since 2015 when they won 60 games. And the season after that, they won 48 games. And I can tell you firsthand that there is more buzz right now than there was when they won 48 games 4 years ago. So it's definitely, you know, some of it's a little bit misplaced. There's probably a little bit of, you know, just fans being fans and being probably a little bit too excited in the moment. But that's a good thing, honestly. When you talk about fan interest in the city of Atlanta, it's not always been there for this team. So they have this young core. You know, Trae Young is a legitimate, you know, star-level guy in the way that they are handling him, the way the fan base is embracing him, and the fans are all excited about the rookies as well. So the fact that they were able to sell out the home opener and have that really be a good atmosphere throughout the game is new in Atlanta. There was MVP chance for Trae Young that night, and made it. I don't think that he's going to win MVP this year by any means, but the fact that they were actually doing that for a home player, and basically in the past, opposing players would get that kind of treatment in Atlanta. It'd be a lot of split crowds when the Lakers came to town, or when LeBron came to town, it'd be a ton of LeBron fans. For a Hawks crowd to be, you know, pretty much 100% behind the Hawks in a big game and have that be sold out, even the opener, was new. And I think that's a good thing for this team. So the buzz is real. It's probably a year too early in terms of expectations in some respects, but I think they're just excited to have this young core on the books. And it's definitely, you know, justifiable because they have that much excitement.
Well, let's talk about the rookies in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of both Locked On Heat and Locked On Hawks on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and a review, especially if it's a good one. So, Brad, obviously there's a lot of buzz, as you mentioned before, about the young rookie class here. You've got a couple of prominent rookies in Miami and Kendrick Nunn and Tyler Hero, and a couple in Atlanta as well, DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish. What's your feeling on this rookie race between the two teams? How are the rookies panning out in Atlanta so far? I know it's a small sample size, but what have you liked and not liked from them so far?
Yeah, I think Hunter is, you know, number one on the list in some ways because he went so high in the draft, but also because he's just more established. Lloyd Pierce has been talking about Hunter like he's a veteran already. After his first game, he got asked about DeAndre Hunter, and he said DeAndre Hunter is not a rookie. That was his answer. It was hysterical. But it's because of the fact that Hunter is a little bit more mature than a typical rookie. He played more years in college, but he just plays like a vet, honestly. You know, defensively, he's really solid. Offensively, he plays within himself. And he's someone I've liked for a long time. I think upside is a legitimate question for a top five pick. He doesn't really have a typical top five pick profile offensively. But I think, you know, the fact that he's a 6'8", two-way wing is really, really valuable in today's NBA. So he's interesting to be sure. Reddish, you know, number 10 overall pick, certainly someone who was a big-time high school prospect. He's behind the curve a little bit offensively. I think you probably saw that in the game on Tuesday. Just offensively, he's just kind of raw right now. Had a great dunk over Hero that made some noise. But for the rest of the game, kind of uneven offensively. I think defensively, he's actually ahead of schedule, which is good for the Hawks. But offensively, just kind of a mixed bag. He's got to figure out what he's going to be able to do at the NBA level. And then Fernando, second round pick, just, you know, some a guy who people had in the first round in a lot of respects. He has a first round talent, probably a late first round talent, but still first round talent, and someone who I think could be a piece of the future. You know, Hero is, by the way, very popular, I think, nationally, which you know. But that was a guy that Hawks fans seemed to like in the draft. I wonder if they considered him. It's kind of high for where they were in the top 10, but Hero looks like a guy who could have gone in the top 10 with the way he's playing so far.
Yeah. Have you been surprised at Hero's production? Because I don't think we saw anything like that when in his 1 year at Kentucky. And obviously, as I mentioned before, in context of Bam Adebayo, John Calipari's system doesn't necessarily maximize the players that they have there because of the one-and-done system and everything else that happened. I mean, we saw Karl Anthony Towns kind of be marginalized during his tenure there. So it's not all that surprising that even a player like Tyler Hero wasn't necessarily highlighted the way he could be. But I've been surprised. I mean, I don't think a lot of Heat fans expected him to be on the board. You know, I think they brought him in for workouts, but you know, obviously there were concerns about his wingspan and his defensive limitations and things of that sort. But I think Heat fans are very happy to have him on the roster now, but that was a big surprise. What's the feeling around Atlanta and your personal feelings on Tyler Hero and his game?
Yeah, I think I'm with you that it was kind of a surprise for him to be this good this early. I think, you know, he'll have some moments when he struggles, I would imagine, in the future.
Yeah, well, if you listen to enough Heat fans, you'll think he's already enshrined at Springfield, I'll tell you that much. I mean,
that's what happens with rookies. It's the same thing with Reddish, and I think Reddish especially on my side. It's just the fact that, you know, rookies are easy to get excited about, and particularly when Hero shoots the way he did and scores the way he has in the recent past already, like, it's easy to get excited about those guys. But, you know, I like Hero as a prospect. I didn't love him as a prospect for the reasons that you kind of stated. He's not big. If the shot doesn't go in, I'm not sure what else is going to happen there, but the shot's going in. So if the shot goes in on a regular basis, that's going to be fine, obviously. And I think probably ideally, I have some questions about what his best role is going to be, because he's kind of just that instant offense guy, but he competes defensively. He's not big, but he gives good effort for the most part. And I thought he was a first round talent as a shot maker, and he certainly looks the part of being that. So he kind of defies some of the standards that you would normally set for a guy in the top 15 that isn't a point guard, but also is point guard size in a lot of respects. But when you shoot like he can and create your shot and get to the rim even a little bit that he has so far, I think that's pretty clearly something to get excited about, even if people, I'm sure, are a little bit too excited.
Yeah, I mean, he's been flashy, and that's something that Miami's been lacking for a long time. I think Deion Waiters is probably the flashiest player that they've had there in the past, you know, 3-4 years. And obviously, he's no longer the player he once was here, and he's off the roster for the most part. But Hero just brings a style that a lot of people have not seen for some time. And he is a good shooter. He is also a pretty decent playmaker, and he does get to the rim pretty easily as well. He's got surprising touch around the basket. And so I think that's probably something he can go to if that shot isn't falling. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic. But I think there's even more optimism surrounding Kendrick Nunn, who, you know, obviously was a last-minute pickup at the end of last season. And he thrived in summer league. He outperformed Hero, I think, in some regards in summer league. And although I didn't personally have high expectations for him, mostly because you had Deion Waiters and others on this roster already, he's outperformed almost everybody on this roster, short of Jimmy Butler. Did you see anything in Nunn that you think he might be? Is he a legitimate Rookie of the Year candidate in your perspective?
I'd be surprised if he actually became one by the end of the year, but the production will probably be there as long as he's in this role playing 30 minutes a night. I mean, half the battle with rookies is just playing a lot. And that's something he's going to do, it appears, unless something changes. You know, the off-court stuff's weird for me to talk about with Kendrick Nunn, but yeah. I think that, you know, as a player, I've always kind of liked him. So I think he's interesting. I'm not sure that he's going to average the numbers required to actually be a Rookie of the Year candidate with guys like John Morant and RJ Barrett slated for high usage roles in addition to whatever Zion ends up doing. But could he be an all rookie guy, like a top 10 rookie that makes one of those teams? Absolutely. If you play 30 minutes a night on a playoff team, that's usually a pretty good path to getting in contention for that kind of stuff.
So let's get into it. Anything that you're particularly looking for in the rematch on Thursday night? Obviously without Trey there, it's a little harder to kind of gauge what this team might be like, but is there anything that you're particularly looking for?
I think just on my end, it's all about what the offense looks like without Trae Young, which we talked about that a little bit earlier, but just generating quality looks, the on-off splits for his offense, offense with him on the court and offense with him off the court, it's just been stark for a year and a half now. So if the Hawks can score at a decent you know, maybe even approaching league average rate in this game, they'll have a chance. If they can't, then they probably won't. Because, you know, defensively, even without Young on the court, the Hawks have been pretty good this year defensively, but I think expectations for them are a little bit lower than that as a general rule for the defense. So there's a reason that the early Vegas lines came out with Miami being a pretty substantial favorite in Atlanta. It's because, you know, Trey means a lot. And if Miami's at full strength, which they appear to be, they are clearly the better team if Young's not going to play. So just keeping an eye on the offense and whether they can score on a team that's going to be ready for them.
Yeah, I'm looking for Justice Winslow to kind of bounce back because I think he really struggled a lot with Jimmy Butler back in the lineup. And I know a lot of Heat fans were disappointed considering he had played as well as he did in for the first three games. And then he just kind of looked out of sorts there without the ball in his hands. He wasn't able to convert he only knocked down one of his seven shots, and he wasn't comfortable in an off-ball role considering he'd had the ball in his hand so often during the first three games. So how he kind of responds to that should be an interesting factor to watch in Thursday's matchup. Any final predictions? I know it's kind of silly to make, but do you expect Atlanta to have a chance here?
A chance, absolutely. I would not pick the Hawks to win. I think that Miami is should be favored, and they are favored in this game. I think the Hawks will have to play some really good defense in order to win this contest, and I would not pick that. But in the NBA, essentially everyone has a chance, particularly unless you're playing against like one of the elite teams. You know, if you get a matchup where you're talking about a mid-tier playoff team like Miami against a team that's a lot worse than that without Trae Young, but they're playing at home, should be a good crowd, TNT game. I think the Hawks can hang around, but I would pick Miami for sure.
Okay, sounds good. All right, make sure you follow Brad and Locked On Hawks during the matchup. That's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support. And thank you, Brad, for joining us on the show.
Thanks, David.
Yeah! Wrap it up, B.